Hey, Justin, it's Dave Weiner here. Thanks for asking me to participate in your project for the 20th anniversary of Lynx.net. First, congratulations. It's pretty incredible having something up and running for that long period of time and being such a visionary way, way back when, in, I guess, 1994, to have seen that this was a good use of the internet. It's a pretty big deal, I think. So congratulations is the first thing. I've thought about your questions, and I'm not sure that, you know, that we don't, like, do this for the same reasons coming from the same place. So I think those are the kinds of questions that you could ask about what you do, which is very personal and revealing, and I'm not sure what your motives are, why you do that, and I'd be very curious. Hopefully you'll be recording some stuff too. Mine is on a different tangent. I mean, I've always sort of come at this as a software developer, and my feeling has been that, you know, there's a, as people say, like, there's a pony in here somewhere. At every level, at every stage of, you know, my interest in online communication. I should probably turn this thing off here. Hold on. Oops. There we go. Yeah, that's probably better. I just realized I have that on because there's a construction project going on upstairs in my apartment building. And yeah, maybe you can even hear some of it. So that might be a problem also with this. Anyway, so I've always come at it as a software developer, and I've been, at every level, been seeing it as a puzzle to try to figure out what is the software that goes with the capabilities of the network that we have at that moment. And I always come at these software projects from the point of view of being the first user. That's sort of like a title, meaning that I'm developing it around my own interests and needs with the hope that that I won't be the only one that will find it useful. And because that's the only way I know how to develop software is, you know, sort of try to build something that I find useful. That's the first thing about a piece of software. Is, you know, what does it do and how useful is it? And, you know, you iterate over that until something pops out that people want to use. And so my exploration started probably seriously started in the early 1980s with CompuServe, and they had a thing called CB Radio, which was a really phenomenal, for the day, I guess this was like 1980 or 81, online service. They had bulletin boards and email and all the rest of that stuff, but the really compelling thing was CB Radio, which basically we all, like, had handles. Almost nobody used their real name. In fact, I don't think anybody did. You know, it became a community, an online community. People didn't call it that at the time, but it behaved exactly like what we think of as an online community these days. And and it was all about fiction and role playing, and, you know, these personas. We weren't really writing about ourselves, but you know how that is, right? It's, whatever you write is about yourself. So of course it was very personal, but it was all in symbolic terms. At the same time I was doing that, I was doing a thing called LBBS, which stood for Living Bulletin Board System. And that ran on an Apple II in my living room in Menlo Park, California. And that was because basically I asked CompuServe if they would let me write software that ran on their servers. And of course, no, they wouldn't let me do that. Even though they knew that I was a software developer, and I was. I'd already been developing software professionally, commercial stuff. And I wasn't just, I didn't feel I was just some random person. And I But, you know, but there was this divide there between, you know, them and us. And I know that because I heard later from people who left there to go work at other things about, and this is a thing that repeats itself all the time, is you end up with companies who have made a business out of providing these communication systems for people, and then they hire a lot of people who don't use it. they don't use the system themselves, so they have to develop some justification for not using it, and they it's always fairly condescending, or at least that's how it feels from my point of view as a user. So they said no, I couldn't run software on their server, and so I basically built my own server. And did it with the Hayes modem, and this is on Apple II running in UCSD Pascal. And then I also developed a piece of software called CB Mama, which was a WYSI graphic interface on top of what was a terminal protocol. And that's a long story. But in case I was, and none of that took root. I mean, LBBS did, and it had a vibrant community and all kinds of things I experienced for the first time. Getting hacked, I certainly experienced that. Learned how to, you know, put up defenses against that and things, procedures that I still use today, many, many, 30 years later, more than 30 years later. So, and that continued through the period when we first met, when we were both writing for Wired magazine, or for Hotwired specifically. And the beautiful thing about the internet was, and this was the breakthrough from my point of view, was that there was no longer somebody who could say no. And whereas my Apple II running in my living room could only serve one user at a time, the internet could serve like as many people, you didn't really know how many people you were serving, and which was, you know, pretty wide open, pretty amazing. And I kept asking people this question. There were developers, you know, that had already climbed the curve in the internet, you know, writing software for the internet. And I kept asking them, you know, it's like, do you have to get approved by anybody? Is this, and no, it's basically you just put up whatever you want. I was like, that's amazing. I can't believe you can do that. So then I spent years in trying out various different ideas for what was content management. And I probably was already calling it that because I had the experience prior to that with developing systems for people who were doing desktop publishing. And so I tried taking the basic principles of desktop publishing and applying them to web publishing, and they worked pretty well. Partly because I had a really good guide on this, a guy named Chris Gulker, who was the system manager at the San Francisco Examiner at the time. And I'd known him because he had worked at Apple before that as a systems guy for their desktop publishing systems. And they were using Frontier, which was my software, Frontier with Quark Express and Aldus PageMaker and various utilities to connect them all together. And this wasn't something I really understood very well myself because I wasn't a desktop publishing guy. But, you know, Chris was really generous in showing me how, you know, he was using it. So I understood the basic philosophy of what they were doing. And I think the reason he was doing it, well, partially because he was a very generous guy, but also because I was developing the software, and the more I understood about his application, the better we could, you know, make the software work for what he was doing. And then by a funny coincidence, there was, I mean, coincidence probably isn't the right word for it, but, I mean, there was the San Francisco newspaper strike in late 1994, which for me was a very huge event. It was just enormously important because I was sort of fumbling around trying to figure out how, you know, the internet protocols worked and how the web worked and everything. And I kept was asking people questions, and I think they were getting annoyed. I mean, that I'm familiar with that. In fact, I'm doing it right now with JavaScript and Node.js and all kinds of different, I'm fumbling around trying to figure out like how to put together my whole world in this whole new space now. But Chris was working for the management newspaper, and I hooked up with people, with the strike people, and we were all doing, flowing the content that previously had flowed out to the newspaper in print, we were now making it flow out to the web, which was kind of ironic given that the strike was over how electronic publishing was going to affect the physical distribution of newspapers. The delivery people were the people striking, and as a result of the strike, it just helped develop the web distribution system, which I think we were all aware of how ironic this was, but nobody really wanted to like tune them into this because you know, I'm a very pro-union guy, but technology was so compelling. And so out of that, and then so now I had people who were, and the great thing about that project was how the writers for the newspapers really understood the web, and they understood it better than I did, and they were teaching me stuff. And I knew how to build the software that would sort of grind through their submissions and then publish them out to the web. They understood what the purpose of the web was and how HTML works, and then some of them like knew exactly what they wanted, and that was great because you always want to have people, users who are visionaries as well, because then, you know, that helps to broaden the utility of the software because they, you know, they have their own ideas about how this thing should work. And of course, you have to be careful about, you know, not creating something that's too confusing. Can't really do lots of different things. But in this case, it was perfect alignment. What they wanted to do was exactly what I wanted to do. And out of that came my first website for the email newsletters that I was publishing called DaveNet. And those went up on the web, I think, very quickly. And right after the newspaper strike, I had this software called AutoWeb. And basically, I just put a file in the right folder and then just ran this script application that would just grind through it all and produce the website. And the website would all go up to FTP, and I got space at Hotwired for that. So out of that grew, we did all kinds of stuff. And then we did 24 Hours of Democracy. I think it was 1995 or 6, somewhere in there. And from that came something called the website framework in Frontier, the Frontier website framework, which was an object-oriented way of storing content on the content server and then have that be generated. So instead of using the file system, we used an object database, which had more ability to, yeah, I don't actually know how much better it was, but it felt a lot better, and so that's what we were doing. And that developed a long way, and AutoWeb became a, you know, sort of cul-de-sac. It wasn't developed long. Before that, there was a thing called Clay Basket, which was an outliner for editing websites, which I think was, like, really ahead of its time. Now I'm actually doing that with Fargo, and we're looking at 20 years later, right? I mean, that's sometimes how long these things take. Before you have enough experience to really make them work. And it's amazing how that is. It's true. I've been lucky that I've been productive for all many, many years writing software. And so I've gotten to see ideas through and do lots of upheavals and restarts and so forth that, you know, that maybe people who had like platforms that that worked with, had a different dynamic, weren't able to do that. Ripping up the pavement every once in a while is not the worst thing in the world to do. Maybe that's enough. I mean, you know, there's, the story keeps going. I only got up to, you know, wherever. This is still before, and I noticed that you asked Meg to comment on it, Meg Hurahan to comment as well, and presumably, hopefully, you'll ask Evan Williams and various other people who participated. I mean, there are a lot of threads that led to where this thing really took off and became a huge thing. You know, there was also, God, I mean, MCI Mail was huge. Apple Link was an enormous community of software developers. It was the biggest thing of its day. And, you know, a lot of the paths that led to blogging go through that. You know, why I'm interested in this right now because of Walter Isaacson's book. He's starting to publish chapters of the book that he's doing about the evolution of, I guess, the internet. And he's just published a thing on online systems, and he just covered a very small fraction of the things that were influential that led to, I mean, there certainly were influential. You know, Doug Engelbart, absolutely. The Well, I was a Well user. Not certainly as much as a lot of other people were, but I was there. Dweiner at well.com, I think, was my email address. And I did a bunch of the development. In fact, the newspaper strike thing was at The Well. That's where the work was organized. What else? Well, he talks about The Well, and he talks about AOL. And it's understandable that from his point of view, I mean, AOL was a very, very important precedent to the internet, for sure. So I'm not, I know I haven't answered your questions. This is kind of that, I think that we all approach this differently. The questions you asked were the questions one would ask Justin Hall about how his online personal publishing world, you know, started and how it's existed for 20 years. You know, to give you an idea of what my, how your ideas impact me or how they describe what I do, it's not really, I mean, they are my ideas. When I blog, it's not just so that I can make my blogging software better. It's every bit as important as the other side of it. I make the tools, you know, that I make so that I can be a phenomenal communicator. I mean, I want the maximum leverage. I love the fact that if I've got something new and hot that is something that a lot of people want to do, that that makes my ideas more interesting to people. And they, you know, this is something that for, you know, like Ev has never been a big blogger. And, you know, he's viewing it in a completely different way. You know, he's trying to build communities, and I'm more about the individual voice and building stuff around that. I mean, it's, and it leads to a different kind of software. I mean, as long as you have all the things, possibilities represented out there, there's just no problem with lots of different choices, you know. And there's yours, and, you know, and then a lot of other people have their own take on why this is great. And that's, in my opinion, that is what's great about it, is the fact that, you know, human beings, it's all about point of view. It's all about perspective. It's what do you see from where you are when you look at the same set of events and the same, like, sort of circumstances? What do you see? And if you get enough different points of view on an event or an object or a person or a life or whatever, then you get close to the truth, because triangulation, you're when you see things from different points of view, a shape in the middle of it emerges, and there are just lots of them, and that's to me is what makes it really interesting, is the ability to feel the presence of other people, you know, in an intellectual way, which has meant that, to answer some of your questions, that I put a pretty big barrier between my physical existence and my online existence. There's just this wall there, and it's something that I don't violate, you know, and it's there have been problems with that, because at times, you know, I don't, my family life and my personal life is not part of my online life, but sometimes I can't keep them separate because there are other people involved, and they make choices too. But from my point of view, I just don't want the lines, I don't want there to be any blur there. My feeling about that is that if you have a lack of definition between your personal life and your online life, then you won't have a personal life. that basically that's just almost a mathematical equation. You just don't have it. And I want that. It's very important to me to have a private existence that is not part of the online existence. In terms of, what will become of my online presence when I die, actually, this is something that I've written quite a bit about, and I'm very concerned about it. And what I call it is future safe archives. There's a hyphen between future and safe. And the answer is that I will disappear, and my online existence will disappear pretty shortly after I die, unless something changes about the way that works. Excuse me. Because the bills won't get paid, and the services will just turn them off, turn the feed, the websites off. Also, a fair amount of my content is dynamic, and the servers crash or the databases fill up. This happens, and even if somebody were paying the bills, eventually the servers would start crashing and would require maintenance, and nobody else would know how to do that, or probably nobody else would care. And they would just, one at a time, just boom, doom, doom, lights would go out, and there would be no more Dave. That would be the end of that. I don't like that because, part of living a creative life, which I do live a creative life, is wanting to do something to make a contribution that lasts, that's bigger than your own existence. I think that's a tough one because, people say they want to change the world, and so many people that say that and actually do it end up changing the world for the worse. So that has to be considered a possibility that, maybe if you are, imposing your will, if you get powerful enough and rich enough and whatnot, to impose your will on the world, which is another way of saying change the world, then maybe you're not actually helping. Maybe you're making things worse, and maybe that's not such a great thing. So, I'd like just to have my ideas be out there in case I was ahead of the curve in some ways, that my ideas will have relevance many years after I'm gone, that they get a chance to exist independently. Although as you get older, what happens is that you give up on some of these things. They feel like they're very important. The urgency of them is there in a way that fades away over time. It's not so important later, which is kind of odd because actually, as you get older, the preservation actually kind of becomes more urgent. But it doesn't really work out that way. Once you've seen enough people die and seen the aftermath of their death, you realize that. That no matter how big you feel in life, when you die, you really do go away. it's unfortunate, it's sad in a lot of ways, but it would be nice if we could do something to make them, our ideas and our work, last a little bit longer. That would be a good thing. And I'm glad that you're thinking about that. Maybe something can be done there. So anyway, I've been talking for about like 24 minutes and 56 megabytes. I got to learn how to compress these things, and I'm probably also going to release this as a podcast. So, anyway, Justin, good luck with your project and congratulations on the incredible accomplishment of Lynx.net. And keep on trucking, man. Bye bye.